Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 59, can you believe it? SSD State of the Union number 2. Today my guest is Chris Evans. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, Rick, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, can't believe you got up to episode 59.
Hey, you were early on, so my chances were good, okay? So, Chris, a lot of people know you as a storage architect. You've been on the podcast before. But for those who may not know, can you give a quick intro?
Yeah, sure. I work as a consultant, mainly in the storage area, but touch on virtualization and other things. I have a blog at thestoragearchitect.com. You can find me on Twitter at Chris M. Evans, and I guess probably loads of other different social media, but they're all LinkedIn. You can find them all from you know, just from the one.
Sure, sure. And you're probably, like, sick and tired of giving that bio, I think.
Yeah, I feel like just saying, well, here's the cut and paste. Yeah, read it, but it doesn't quite work that way over a podcast.
Yeah, I know. Between, you know, we've had you on Virtual Mania, then InfoSmack, and then you've been on with Greg at Naked Tech, and
yeah,
it's getting a little bit old, but you're still a great guest, and that's why people keep asking you back. Today, Chris, want to talk about solid-state disks. I mean, and my take, Chris, and I think you're generally in agreement, is that, you know, this is the next big disruptive technology for enterprise technology, and, you know, just looking for some open thoughts. I mean, do you think it's going to be disruptive in the data center? I mean, what's your knee-jerk reaction?
I think it already has been disruptive to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. We're only seeing the tip of it so far, and especially over the last sort of maybe 18 months sort of time period. Before that, we know that AMC put the SSDs into arrays for the first time around 2009, I think, mm-hmm. off the top of my head. And we've seen an evolution of that. But what we've had to see is an evolution of both platforms and of the software that allows them to be used most efficiently. Yeah. And as we've moved forward and that's developed, I think we're starting to see a real ramp up, more vendors coming to the market with products, dedicated SSD products and so on. So we're really, really seeing that groundswell now.
Yeah, and you know, that's an important point. Those vendors coming to market with kind of, dare I say, SSD and then supporting software-centric solutions, I'm seeing some of these in, like, you know, a la Tintri, Store Simple, you know, next gen storage, right? Those things, yep, that kind of put that high performance IO in a blended solution kind of at the center. This is a fundamental thing, right? Because these aren't the big normal storage company names, right, that we all know and think of when we think of enterprise storage. Yep. So this approach is showing up. It's happening. People are using these things, and they're great. And I think really that, you know, the most intelligent use of the SSD, that was something you also mentioned, because, you know, any storage brand, right, you could load up a tray of SSDs, but it really has the same problem, just with a higher price tag of what we've been doing forever. I mean, would you disagree?
Well, exactly. So if you look at when SSDs were first put into devices, they were put in as maybe a RAID set or a shelf or something you could put in there and say, right, I can carve some LUNs out of this. But, of course, that was expensive.
Yep.
You were only ever able to target all of the data on the LUN. So if you had a big LUN or if you had a lot of LUNs on the server, it was expensive. If you were using, say, a database product where the hotspot moved around a lot, you could never predict which LUN was going to be the hot one at any one time. Again, it would become expensive because you'd dedicate the whole database to SSD, or you might not get the benefit. And initially, that made it really expensive. It wasn't really an elegant solution. It was the starting point, but it wasn't particularly good.
Right, and it doesn't make sense to have a cold spot on SSD, right? It's just, that's an incredible waste of money. And that was probably in the, I'll just throw a number out there, 80% or more of that storage was probably a cold spot. Would you disagree?
Well, exactly. So I've done analyses on arrays where I've looked at the IO against a LUN, and if you look at the IO against just all the LUNs in a box in general, you get that long tail effect. So you get a small number of LUNs that are very busy, and that tails off. And similarly, with an individual device, a server, for instance, you would find a similar thing across all of the disks that are presented to that server. You know, perhaps, as you said, 80% of the data is quiet, 20% of the data is active, and in something like a database, that would roll forward over time. Even more so in a virtual environment where that is even less predictable because we're doing random I/O that could be writes 1 minute, could be reads the next, and it becomes very unpredictable and it moves around a lot. But it's only typically a very small amount on traditional environments.
Yeah, and that long tail effect is probably a better way to explain it. I'm really good at guessing numbers, but I got to give Chris credit. This guy, he does private and or public benchmarks. He knows how to monitor storage, and if you've had to deal with your storage admin before, with a busy lawn of virtual machines, this is the type of stuff that he would know, he would catch, and he's an excellent expert for that. So Chris, kind of the next thing I was thinking of was, and I think that this is also true, but I also want your opinion on it, that all SSDs are not created equal, right? We might know that from our own kind of, laptop experiences, but do you have any kind of insight on one SSD to the other in terms of things to look for, measurements or tests or something?
Okay, so first of all, it's worth differentiating between the different types. So you have that's quite a difficult word to say, SLC and MLC. SLC being single-level cell, and MLC being multi-level cell. And effectively what that's saying is that in an SLC, you only store one state. You store 0 or 1. And therefore, every cell only can represent one value. In MLC, you can represent multiple states, and therefore you can represent multiple bits, and you can combine multiple bits into a single cell, and therefore you can make those much more inexpensively than you can SLC.
Right.
The disadvantage is that the MLC are inherently less reliable because you're not just doing an on-off state, you're trying to do multiple states of voltage within that cell, and therefore you might mispredict it, and you might get read failures, or you might get eventually very quickly over time the cell failing. So from a starting point, the devices themselves are different. You can pay a lot more for SLC compared to MLC, but we'll talk about in a little while how that's changing. And on top of that, you need software. And you need software that can actually write to these devices efficiently and can manage things like the wear leveling, which is where you write across the device evenly to make sure that it wears evenly and one part doesn't wear out. There are other techniques like write amplification where you're trying to make sure that you're not doing too many writes to the device in order to write data, because with some SSD devices you need to read the data before you write it because of the way it's stored in blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So different vendors have obviously got their algorithms and their technology working much more effectively than others, even on those different types of devices. So they're not all the same.
Yeah, exactly. And wow, you set it up great. The second point you mentioned was the software. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, this is where you don't just hook it up to your traditional RAID controller. The interface might be the same, but that's the software, for example, that, from a write patterning standpoint, this is where the write patterning that the array controller needs to be aware so it won't burn out the first spot, because on rotational storage, you want to pick stuff kind of near and close, right, so that you can get that quick seek time, right, and totally different approach in this situation.
Yep. So look at products like Violin's memories storage arrays. They although they don't use SSDs in the traditional format, as in they haven't packaged it to look like a replacement hard drive. Effectively, they're using solid state devices within there in memory chips. They do wear leveling across the whole array rather than within a single device, because they know that they need to balance that across the whole array to make sure that they can reduce the risk and minimize failures. If you look at, say, Pure Storage, they know how to manage the device itself because they work very closely with the vendor in terms of understanding the best way to deal with that from from a management perspective and how the firmware on that device will respond. So a lot of work has gone into both the devices themselves and as people are building these into new arrays and devices to put intelligence in there to make these devices work effectively. And I think that possibly was one of the main things that people maybe were scared of originally with solid state. There's that understanding that over time this device will eventually wear out. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't look at a hard drive and think, okay, I'm going to write to this, 100,000 times and then I'll have to throw it away. You just expect a hard drive to keep on going. Whereas there's a pretty much guaranteed failure point for SSDs, and therefore you know you're going to have to replace them. So you want them to last as long as possible and be as efficient as possible.
So on the software selection, that's an excellent point to expand on. And I have some kind of deep, low-level conversations with, like, the folks at Tentri, and they'll go so far as to only, use one brand of SSD because of that integration at the firmware on the device level type of stuff.
Yeah.
You want to make sure when you're going to the SSD realm with a solution that, the engineering matters in terms of the details at that controller level. So it does make a difference. Take the time, as a general recommendation to the listeners, take the time to figure out how that I/O works, right? Don't just look at speeds and feeds, but, look at how the communication from the software and then the bus, to the device occurs, because once you get your head around how that happens, and then, just think if it's, purely designed for that platform, or is it, simply a RAID controller for a rotational storage that now fits SSDs, and it's not where you want to be.
Yeah, so just finishing that point, just imagine EMC, when they brought their first Symmetrics device out 20 years ago, they've spent 20 years developing the software algorithms and the features within there to best use the and get around a lot of the physical characteristics of the hard drive. What we're seeing now is vendors who are bringing out arrays that are getting around the physical limitations and making the best of the solid-state drives. So the people who are going to be successful, I think, will be the people who can really make that software layer and those algorithms work really effectively, just like EMC did with Symmetrics.
Yeah, it's a good point, and it's scary that the Symmetrics, I didn't know it had been around that long, but it doesn't surprise me. I want to go back to the price point you brought up, but I'm curious, especially with some of the news of late. You see it with a lot of the storage companies, but I want to call them flash cards on storage controllers. How does that play into the current state of solid-state storage?
So if you're thinking about those, you're thinking about PCIe SSD devices, I guess is what you're referring
to.
Then.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking like a PAM card, the NetApp world.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And then what's FlashCache? Is that EMC's new one?
Yeah, I think you think you're right. Yeah, they've got VFCache was the new device they just brought
out.
Yeah.
So how do those play in? Right? Are those a good, interim investment for controllers that you might have, or what's your big thought on those?
So I guess everybody's theory is the closer you are to the compute with the I/O, the better it is. So when you're on an external storage array, you're further away from the CPU, therefore you're wasting time. By putting the SSD even closer to the processor, by putting it on the PCIe bus, you're much closer to the heart of where things are happening, and therefore you can get your transactions through, or you can do processing better, or whatever. And I think that's where those devices have been really successful, because they've given that functionality and put it back into the server and allowed the server to not necessarily have to go out to an external storage array for certain things, and that gives you a massive, massive performance boost. Obviously, NetApp have had this around for a long time in their storage array, which is a bit further away, and that cached read IOs from disk. And to be honest, that was pretty much necessary for the design of their technology anyway, because the way that they write data, they needed something to be more effective on reads, and PAM's a good solution for them. So let's put that one aside to a certain degree. Really, the PCIe SSD guys are the ones that are becoming very interesting, because they're moving closer to the CPU. They're giving you the ability to really, really ramp up the workload, and they're managing to demonstrate real performance improvements for people, especially people who need to worry about microseconds rather than milliseconds in terms of response time. And I think that's a really interesting area because I think it was Fusion.io who did a test earlier this year, and they came up with this this test, and I can't remember whether they tried to get into trillions of IOs per second or gazillions of IOs per second. But effectively, what they were what they were trialing was a feature that would allow them to hook into the kernel of the operating system and effectively extend real memory to their PCIe device.
Oh, wow.
It took me a while to work it out, and I really should give a good call out here to Chris Miller, who mentioned this to me last year at an event. And I had a call with Fusion.io earlier this year, and they sort of confirmed that, although there's no official announcement or details of it yet, but it's coming. But you just think, if you can now extend the real memory of that server into, you know, multi hundreds of gigabytes, and you can run it at almost the same speed, just think how much performance you can put into a server now.
Well, yeah, it's the bus, really. Those interfaces, you know, PCI Express in particular, those are fast interfaces.
And yeah.
Wow, yeah. We're on the brink, right? And then once the software, and then there's a couple other technologies, right, like it, like SCSI Express is another one.
That's
going to kind of dovetail into that situation. Some of the software logic that can kind of take these new speeds and feeds, right, and present it out as an iSCSI target, and then we're on the data superhighway. Watch out! Wow.
Well, what I like about it is that it there's an opportunity to take a little step further. So these devices plugging in directly into the PCI bus, and then obviously being very closely integrated through the kernel of the operating system. In traditional coding, we'd have to be very careful about that because we know that memory is volatile, and if we turn the machine off or we lose it, mm-hmm. all of a sudden we've lost state and we can't work out where we were. With this extension now, we're talking about memory that's consistent. So this memory would still be there and we can rely on it, mm-hmm. even if we have a power drop. And that allows you to think about being a bit more risky about how you put your data and where you put it, and maybe we can make things work slightly differently to the way they did before. I haven't really thought through exactly how that could work, but I just think there's an opportunity there to be even more clever about our programming and give it yet another level of performance into the environments that we haven't even thought about, or develop new features and things like virtualization hypervisors that we haven't really thought about.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, and that's a good call out to the data integrity, right? You know, it's not really any good if we can't recover from the unplanned, and the last thing you want to do is have it exist in parallel, dare I say, you know, RAID PCI buses. That would kill its throughput, but no, that's a good call out there. Let's circle back to that price topic, Chris. You know, the SLCs are, you know, I think we see most of the commodity SSDs. If I go to my local computer shop, that might be what I see. Is that, first of all, correct? I think those are the mainstream. Like, if you go out and buy one, you would generally see SLC, single-level cell. Is that right?
If you go and buy a commodity one in somewhere, you'd get an MLC device. Oh, SLC would be the more expensive.
Okay. Gotcha. Because, right, sorry, I had it backwards. Okay,
yeah
lower priced. And going to Wikipedia, the best information of all this stuff. So the multi-cell are usually lower price, more available. Single level is higher a price and generally not what you see in your commodity brand.
Yeah, and that's the one that potentially has a higher reliability or a longer write time. You can write to it more because the difference between the 0 and 1 in that one cell can degenerate a lot further before you decide that the cell isn't readable, which isn't the case with the MLC, so it lasts longer as well.
Right, and there's, again, according to Wikipedia, there's more capacity via over-provisioning, so the controller would kind of knock out regions or knock out cells that have kind of reached that limit before it fails the whole device, right? That would be kind of how it would work.
Yeah, a lot of the vendors put in an additional piece of capacity which you don't have access to, mm-hmm. which effectively, if you imagine, I mean, just common sense would tell you, if 20% of the device fails after, you know, another year of use, by putting another 20% in, you prolong the life of that whole device by another year. So there's a trade-off there about where that fits. But, you know, all of the vendors will over-provision these devices, as you mentioned.
And that trick's existed in the rotational storage world forever also, right? So that's not anything new.
Yeah,
so I think, what is it, like a parity? There's a small amount of parity that goes on in the single drive, if I remember right, that ensures that, you know, if a platter starts failing a check, it'll stay out of that region or something like that.
So there is, and then it'll reuse it. It'll do a bad block move, and it'll put that block somewhere else.
Yeah, so really every drive we've been buying are 6 terabytes. It's just marketing deciding when they're going to be sold that way, right?
Yeah, do you know what? I did some work, probably a couple of years ago, looking at different disks for some purpose. No, I mean, not because it was interesting, because I was getting paid to do it, because it wasn't particularly interesting looking at these individual devices. But I was looking at capacity, the number of platters, and performance and power and so on, in order to put some metrics together to help work out the consumption. And as I was plotting these up, there was one particular device that had an unreasonable amount of capacity. The capacity didn't make sense. And effectively what they'd done is they put another platter in this disk to up the capacity, but they weren't using anywhere near the whole capacity of the platters. But they wanted to keep in that normal 250 gig, 320 gig, 500 gig sort of steps, and they wanted the mass to look good, but the device was capable of a lot more. And I reckon if you could have low-level formatted that, you probably could have increased the capacity by sort of 20-25%.
Well, and I guess you could position that, you know, as an availability technique, right? If there's a lot more of that region or that storage available, that low-level software, you know, sell these as enterprise drives, right? They can last, I don't want to say forever, but they'll last potentially a lot longer because of that reserve, right? So that might be, you know, one of those OEM tricks that people play, maybe.
Yeah, I guess the difference with the hard drive was every time you write to it, it wasn't damaging or wasn't degrading the media. And that's the difference with SSD, that every time you write to it, effectively you're degrading it.
Yeah,
so
true.
There's a sort of conceptual difference there.
Awesome. Hey, Chris, man, this has been an outstanding conversation, and I'm doing a series of this, right? So
right.
Actually, the next person I'm talking to is Nigel. Okay. So,
excellent.
My goal is really to bring in a lot of different perspectives about SSD. So I had another gentleman on. I had Jason Perlow on. So my goal is that I get a lot of different perspectives on SSD State of the Union, and I hope that this has helped the listeners. Chris, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
That's fine. No, I've really enjoyed it. It's good to be back, Rick, and it's good to see that, you know, you've got up to nearly number 60, and I hope to get invited in back for number 100.
Hey now, you're there. Deal. Yeah, it's been fun. You know, this is a different beast of a podcast, you know, at work, and I really appreciate you and the other experts being on it. My show is only as good as it gets. That's what I tell people.
You have to have somebody setting up the questions as well.
We didn't have a script, you know that. Awesome. Thanks again, Chris.
Okay.